I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Judy Goldberg. She's founder and executive director of Youth Media Project, and Gabriel Reima is here. He's mentor and outreach coordinator. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here again.
Pleasure.
It's great to have you. I mean, Youth Media Project, I think there's something that I find so interesting, which is organizations that are kind of under the radar that make it possible for so many people to have the lives they want a little later on in their lives. And I think of Youth Media Project as an organization like that. You're giving young people training in media, and then they go off and do things in the world they never would have been able to do otherwise.
Well, I appreciate you seeing it that way. I like to think of it in that way as well.
What is it? How did it start?
Youth Media Project really evolved, I guess, fundamentally out of the work that I have always done since I was a young person, certainly in my 20s, where I had really two simultaneous interests. One was to be a media producer or storyteller. I actually started out in theater arts, but quickly ended up going to the Anthropology Film School here in Santa Fe, and then worked with another nonprofit who did video. And so my first years were really about doing video production, many years actually, and then at the same time, simultaneous, was education and working in schools and doing a lot of artist-in-residence types of programs, or artist-in-residence programs, and then it really evolved into what Youth Media Project has become, which is looking at one's community really as the greater classroom, and that that teaching and learning can be very integrated outside of the walls of our institutions, and all the content we need in the community can drive the learning of reading and writing, and arithmetic could get in there somewhere, but really it's humanities focused, it's social issues focused, it's who are we in the context of the lives that we ultimately are living and will be living.
Right, right. Now there's many beautiful examples of that. Do you want to give us one or two things that have happened that exemplify that kind of like community as your classroom?
Well, I have a most current example that which I think walks us through all the elements of what we do at Youth Media Project. One of the things is we have, and it's really the centerpiece to our work, is our Audio Revolution radio broadcast. And we're actually now in our eighth season. And that work really is a culmination of both an after-school production team that we've been running, as well as the work that we do in Santa Fe Public Schools. We've worked up north in Rio Riba County and also in Las Vegas through the United World College. So this particular story that is just burning in my heart right now comes from having opened up a letter two Saturdays ago, which I happen to have right here.
Hold it up to the microphone. Excellent. Ah,
oops.
Stop doing that now.
And before I open this letter on the air, or reopen it, I just want to say that our work really starts with some kind of social issue or something that brings us a sense of focus and inquiry. And we generally, or as in, I'd say always, are working in partnership with other organizations. So in this particular story, we are working with Real Fathers, which is a nonprofit in town, looking at really changing or exploring, identifying the narrative around fathers in our society, and giving support to that. And then the Adelante program, which is Santa Fe Public Schools program serving homeless students. And or students experiencing homelessness. At any rate,
you're not allowed to say homeless anymore.
Well, you can't. The thing about saying someone is homeless kind of puts them in like that's where they are, rather than they are. It's a pass through condition.
I think it's the there's a committee to make us say more syllables every week. They just add more syllables to our lives. But go ahead.
Well, I like the kind of like speaking so you have like three currents going simultaneously. That's one of my favorite. It's a little hard to do when you just have one voice to express them in.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But I mean, you can't say pet anymore either. You have to say companion animal. Anyway, go ahead. Students experiencing homelessness.
Students experiencing homelessness. So that was the partnership. Adelante, Real Fathers, Youth Media Project. And we had the great fortune to have similar to Gabe's position of someone who had been a student with us and then became a what we now call project leader, Carmen Gallegos, who led this group, which was perfect because she had similar background and profile of the students that we ended up working with. Well, one of the students, also named Gabriel, had a story that he wrote, and all of the students' pieces ended up being, one way or another, a letter to their fathers. And in Gabriel's case, he had never met his father, so his story, which we will be hearing, was really to this person whom he imagined. And the exciting thing, I think, for us is, and you can relate to this too, being a radio producer, is you never really know where these airwaves end up. And
it's true.
And what comes back?
You get a letter from Jakarta.
Fabulous. Yeah, I know. It can be so unifying. It's really exciting. So in our case, with this particular project and this particular story, not only do we put it inside of an Audio Revolution broadcast, and we always have these listening events before they air, and that always generates great interest and connection. But then we launch our broadcasts on KSFR, and then they also get repackaged and are broadcast on two other radio stations, KRZA in Alamosa, Colorado, and on KUNM in Albuquerque. And on top of that, in addition to the broadcasts, we also select out some of the stories, and they get put on something called Public Radio Exchange.
PRX.
PRX.org. Check it out. And there are other stations, you know, anywhere can pick it up and use it. And in this case, with Gabriel's story about his father, it was picked up by something called Public Radio Remix and broadcast in Massachusetts.
Shall we hear the piece right now?
That's perfect!
Okay, let's hear it right now, and we'll come back and let you know what happened.
Hi, Dad. How are you? Just asking because I care. I just want to know if you care, because it doesn't seem like it. Well, if you did, you'd be around, right? Well, I guess so, but you're not. Dad, if I see you, I wouldn't love you. I wouldn't hate you. I would see you with respect, because you care to come see me. But if you did, don't try to make me a different person. Because were you around at any of my games when I was getting suited up? When I was wearing that gold and black Chimao jersey? Or what about that gold and black leather jersey? Or what about when I moved and I was wearing that gold and blue sombrero jersey? Or what about my current jersey, the turquoise hernia jersey? Nope, you weren't at any of those games, or you never saw me suit up. Or how about when you were at my second birthday, my third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, or tenth? Were you ever there? No, just my mom was. But why weren't you around? How come my mom was only around at my games, my performances, and my birthday parties? Was there a reason that you couldn't be there? Because my mom was there. That's why if you come back, I'll only have respect for you, not love or hate, because you care to be in my life. Or you care to even think about me. I want to know if you think about me, because I don't know. Though my mom loves me, I want to know if you do. Because people just don't have babies to have them and forget about them. Please, Dad, show me a sign of care or love. If you don't come back, it's all cool. You know who was at all my games, parties, and performances? My mom. You know who saw me suit up in those jerseys? My mom. Who was there every night making food? My mom. Who was always there at my bedside when I'd go to sleep? My mom. At age 10, I got my first pair of Jordans, but you didn't buy them, it was my mom. That's why I love her, because she was there my whole life, the whole times you weren't. The only way I could know you, or know that you love me, or a sign that you love me, is my mom. Sincerely, your son.
Well, that was heavy.
Mm-hmm.
This was the student who recorded this. That was his story.
That was totally his story. That's what he came forth with. And that is what reached this individual who responded.
So, but it wasn't his... Was it his father who responded?
Well, let's lay it out here. So
you got a letter.
So I got a letter heavily taped. So I didn't even really grog that at first. I was just trying to open the letter, and usually I open it in the front, and I had to do it to the side. And then later, before going much further, because first of all, I opened it. And when I opened it, I saw, oh, my goodness, here it is in front of us, that there are two very, very fully written pages.
Single-spaced,
all
handwritten.
Handwritten. Someone
beautiful
took
writing.
Beautiful, like no cross-outs, no... It was, like, remarkable just looking at it. And how often do we get letters like this ever anymore? And so I just saw that and just folded it right back up and put it back in the envelope, knowing I wanted to take some time to digest this. And then, and only then, did I look at the back of the envelope that said, from a Massachusetts correction institution, the contents that have been evaluated in the department, and da-da-da-da-da, if you have... If this is unwanted correspondence, you know, you don't want to hear from this inmate, let us know in various ways. So that sort of set the stage for opening up this letter and actually reading it. And I'm just going to, just a few clips from it, mainly the beginning where he says, to Youth Media Project members, this is on 1-10-13, I am Sal Ali, sentenced to life for bank robbery with 20 years in on the sentence. And then he goes on to say how young people, so many young people are brought into this world today with really difficult situations. And he kind of is applauding the work that was done here. And he says, quoting him, but in spite of the chaos in this world, with all the complications in it, there is a wise, very intelligent, skillful generation of youth who refuse to lie down and weep over the condition, who are standing up tall to confront all the negative aspects in life that have ruined a large part of our people. And then the second part of his letter is, as he says, that he wrote as a short story because his son probably feels the same way as the kid or young man felt about his dad. And then he really directly uses Gabriel's story to really directly reach his own son.
So this, he wasn't actually Gabriel's father, but he was in what might be considered a similar position with respect to his own son?
Exactly. So it really speaks to the universality, which is at the core of what we like to think this work is about.
Amazing. Gabriel Rima.
Mm-hmm. A different Gabriel.
Sorry. Yeah, a different Gabriel.
I had just one thing to say to that. I think that's the power of media in general is... It gives us an opportunity to sort of vicariously reconcile our own issues through us seeing similar issues played out on a movie screen or in a radio story. You know, we're allowed to relate to that and kind of see how our own personal story relates to the universal story. You know,
that's right.
And I don't know.
And also to see even if. We, for example, in this story, grew up with two loving parents who adored us the whole time, whatever. We're still part of this larger society, and I think we get mm-hmm. involved in our individual lives and forget that this little boy and the guy in prison and this young man's father, wherever he is, are all part of our time group, our society, our geography, our lives in one way or another.
Exactly, and if this doesn't inspire you to get it, you know, if you're not an individual who relates to this in the sense of, yeah, I had an absent father, you know, and you're an individual who has had parents who love them, this is the type of thing which might inspire you to reach out to someone, to be an educator, you know, to be like, wow, I had that opportunity, and this person didn't, and you know, kind of live up to that sense of responsibility of like, okay, there are some issues we need to face in our community.
Yeah, and at the very least, to have compassion for young people who are going through some serious troubles because of the way they grew up.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved in youth media, Gabriel?
Well, as Judy said, Youth Media Project operates in different various organizations and schools, and I actually got involved initially through my school. I went to Monte del Sol, and they had a radio arts class. So I began through that, making a couple radio pieces, learning a little bit about media literacy, you know, how to actively analyze media, consciously consume media.
How to see through the scams that they're trying to perpetrate
exactly.
on you to buy stuff you don't need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, it just got me really interested in, you know, being someone who kind of would like to be, a catalyst or someone who's, you know, championing the people, helping the people get their voice out, you know, and having a lot to say myself personally that I didn't really know where to say. I saw the value in radio and all media in general. And so I continued being involved. Judy would come and ask me to host the odd radio program she didn't have a host for or something like that. Hosted a couple shows, hosted this show for the Santa Fe Indian School, spoken word team, hosted this show about this really tragic car accident that occurred a few years back. And then I actually came back through another nonprofit in town, EarthCare. I was kind of employed to be their liaison, right, to Youth Media Project. So I was sort of EarthCare's voice on the radio, and would use my segment, Seeds of Sound, to talk about various social and ecological issues that I thought were pertinent to whatever topic we were tackling for that show.
So you have covered all sorts of topics on Audio Revolution, Youth Media Project, and you're also a musician.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I make hip-hop music. I'm a lyricist.
And so you have... Do you have a group or consistent people who perform the music that you write or the lyrics that you write?
Well, that's certainly been a challenge, and something that Youth Media Project has actually helped me with is becoming more independent in that sense, is that I've always been dependent on other people to produce my music and to, you know, give me beats and help me with that, you know, because I've only had the lyrics down. So it's been inconsistent in terms of having support, musical support for that, and that's one of the hardest things about trying to make that a reality for me right now.
Very interesting. So you're working with young people now.
Yeah, exactly. So after having personally been touched by this work, you know, I saw the significance in being that individual that reaches out to someone and helps them feel heard and helps them be educated as to how to express their feelings and their thoughts in an articulate way in a manner which is received by a large audience, right? So I began, Judy actually offered me a position, which is a really, really, really cool example of how this work can escalate, you know, how eventually, you know, you get interested in something, you start pursuing it, you know, and gradually it becomes more and more serious, and all of a sudden, just out of you being curious, you end up involved in a really legitimate way, eventually getting, you know, paid by an organization to do the things that you love.
Right.
So right now, as that's manifesting for me, is I will be starting an 8-week after school intensive program, co-sponsored by the Boys and Girls Club, actually will be held at Warehouse 21, about hip hop and spoken word. So this program is really about teaching people about a little bit about the history and about the cultural context of hip-hop and spoken word, but really, in alignment with the work that we do at Youth Media Project, it's about helping these kids take control of their own voice and learn that no matter, you know, what you're gonna, no matter what you're going to do in your entire life, be it, you know, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be whatever you are in your personal relationships, in your work life, you are going to have to speak, and you're going to have to do it with a sense of conviction. You're going to have to do it firmly, you know, and you're going to have to just communicate sensitively and powerfully. And I think that at the key of it is a really huge tenet, a huge pillar of hip-hop and spoken word, is to be able to get up and be just a random human being who is so connected to themselves and their passions and their values that they can be an authoritative voice on something.
Yeah.
Even though no institution or third party has given them that power,
right,
that they've found it inside themselves to be an authoritative voice.
It's very interesting because what you're saying is important, and I guess my own understanding of that is in order to be authentic and to be yourself, it takes a lot of craft. There are some people who are naturals, but it takes, I mean, if you just get a fourth grader who's talking in the halls in a very articulate way and then bring them into the studio, they can't do it until they learn that craft.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practice, absolutely. And I think what Gabe is articulating so beautifully is he has found it for himself, and now he has really stepped into the discipline of it. He's learning as well the craft in terms of the technical skills at Youth Media Project, because he comes with a great wealth of internal knowledge and wisdom and creativity. And so there's a lot of opportunity in our organization and with what Gabe is leading for young people to step in and to go, okay, this is something I want to do, and to know that you're not going to be perfect. I mean, I think that's one of the disasters of media is it looks so easy. It looks like they're just being themselves,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. It's sort of like acting. It's like, what's the... You just get up there and, it's incredibly hard.
Exactly. And I think it's hard to actually maintain your natural voice. You come into it with all that enthusiasm and... excitement, sort of the initial stage of creativity. And then when you start to break it down to learn the craft, it kind of gets like, ooh, it's a bit more structured. So it's the integration of the two.
Right.
Well, and I just want to say that looking at radio as a product, people who are hearing radio, you're only hearing the culmination of a lot of hard work that's gone into that, a lot of planning and a lot of learning. And I think...
And in your case, a lot of editing.
Yeah, definitely. More and more as my job progresses. And so it's just that we need to be sensitive to, at Youth Media Project, we are sensitive to the fact that it's not just about the product, even though we love a solid product, but it's about all the education and all the learning and all the relationships that are built on our way to creating this product.
That's right. Which is life itself.
Yeah.
All those relationships and all those, and that web that you're basically weaving that extends into your personal life and the life of your society. And there's another dimension, which we heard in that beautiful moving piece that you brought with you, Judy and Gabriel, a few moments ago, with this young man. There's also a lot of post-production. So the person writes the story, they record the story, you edit the story, and then you're adding the birthday party and the crowds and the music and whatever.
Exactly. And that was beautifully crafted by Elliot Fisher, actually, who used to be part of our team as an AmeriCorps. And I just want to speak a little bit about the ways that one can be involved in addition to what we've already talked about. This is really the second year where we're launching this what we're now calling the New Media Fellowship. And so the idea here is that people get into this. They may even consider pursuing this kind of work in their academic careers. And they will be, and we're still setting this up, offered a position, as we have had three or four times now. We were able to access funds through AmeriCorps, whereby interns come in and are both, again, media producers and educators. And so we really see this as not only learning skills that are applicable in all kinds of arenas, but really a job, a focus of as the terms in raising funding are, workforce development. These are, in my view, in the future, real jobs. And they can complement classroom teachers. They can be intensives, and as we haven't touched on yet, also go out internationally. We've done work internationally, sending students to Australia.
This little Youth Media Project starts down here in Santa Fe and in KSFR, and suddenly you've got a bunch of kids going to Australia. What was that all about?
Yeah, well, these are remarkable things, and it is. I mean, back to about relationships. I mean, that particular project was a brainchild of John Brayman, who came into our orbit and had very similar interests in terms of education and experiential education. So that was an invitation by the Parliament of the World's Religions to come to the conference in 2009. and where it was the first time they had any youth representatives, and our students who went, Dolma Smithback and Carmen Gallegos, produced wonderful radio stories that then got out into the world. So that the opportunities really, as it has unfolded, are endless. We have been in conversation with Sierra Leone for the last 3-4 years, and it may be that they will be sending some people to train with us and bring it back to their community of Tayama, and all connected to the Amistad story. Anyway, it's just amazing, the networks of possibility here. It's really exciting.
And it's sort of weirdly and beautifully organic. You start doing something, and then another thing happens, and another thing, and there's a feeling of, like, plant growth or something like that.
Exactly.
To the whole thing.
It's catalytic, it's enzymatic, and it's very tentatolactical.
We're talking to Judy Goldberg.
Nice. You can tell you scored high on your SATs for sure.
Not.
Gabriel, what are your plans? Do you plan to stay? Do you know yet if you want to have a career in radio, media, things like that?
That's hard to tell at this point because I'm really passionate about education, and obviously for my own music it makes a lot of sense to continue with audio production. But part of me, there's this dichotomy where part of me, it would either be something along the lines of radio or music, or something along the lines of doing organic farming, you know, and doing this sustainable permaculture. You know, it's like this bisection in me that's sort of like, I don't know whether or not I should try and sort of play the game, you know, integrate into city life, you know, maybe I was thinking about moving to like Brooklyn, something like that. Or, you know, the other side of me is like, go to Oregon, you know what I mean? And like,
yeah, yeah.
So it's like, it's, and I think, it's hard.
I think that's a beautifully expressed way of talking about what your whole generation is going through right now. It's like, we know we want to be earth friendly. And we know we love the media of our that we were born into, and what do we do with that? And I don't know if anybody has any great answers, but I think you're all co-creating it together.
And for me, this has just been an invaluable, remarkable experience of, I mean, at the root, I would love this to be intergenerational media project. And it has become that way in terms of the listening events that we do. And I just want to put in a plug that if anyone is listening to this and interested in joining us on our, sometimes they're once a month, sometimes twice a month, listening events that we do, we are now housed at Warehouse 21. That's where our office is. And by the great graces of those who have created Warehouse 21, and thank you, Anna, we have access to their media lab, their recording studio, their the fashion studio becomes our listening space, the theater, so we can invite people in. And we really have these remarkable events where it's a potluck. We provide pizza and salad and something to drink, and we sit around and we listen for the whole hour show together and then talk about it. And, you know, say what worked and what stayed with us and recommendations. How can these messages get out in different ways? We did this remarkable bullying show last year where 50 people attended, and 2 students came up and said, I want to take those stories to one of the classes that I know. You know, I mean, it grows and grows and grows.
One thing I'd just like to say before we finish up is that I think one of the most important aspects of Youth Media Project for me is that it is a vessel for the dying art of community involvement. And that I think I encourage everybody to get involved in Youth Media Project or any other group or any other vessel, which is a space for you to meet people in your community, to talk to people in your community, to hear their stories, to be heard by them, and to be seen as a person and an individual. And I think that's one of the things that we're really losing in our society is a place to be recognized and recognize.
It's so true. I call it non-commercial public space. Being out in the world in a non-commercial place where you're actually talking about things of interest to you, and it's not just over the dinner table. And you guys are doing it.
Doing our best.
Yeah. So, Audio Revolution, it's an hour-long program, and it airs on KSFR every other Wednesday from 7 to 8. And so people can tune in for that. They can also go to youthmediaproject.org and find out all about the Youth Media Project, of which Judy Goldberg is the founder and executive director, and Gabriel Reima is mentor and outreach coordinator. And we want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's wonderful to be here.
I'd like now to welcome back to the program Ben Swan. He is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Great to be here as always.
And Suzanne Fuqua is here. She's Director of Behavior and Training. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you actually get animals ready, particularly dogs, but dogs and cats, so that they are adoptable. And that means they come in with what some of us might call bad dog behaviors, and you send them out as good dogs.
Well, we like to try. It's not always quite as simple as that. The behavior department of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter assesses behavior when dogs come in as stray or owner surrender. So we have a standard set of tests that we do to see what we can find out about that dog.
What kind of tests?
We do an affiliation. We take the dog outside. We turn it loose. We see how long it takes before it comes to us, just to judge sociability. We do a test, a food bowl test, where we put food down and then we try to take it away to find out if the dog will guard that food.
Is that bad if they do?
It is. It is a potential problem in the home because it could be a bite. Could be a child could go for the food and the dog is guarding. We also do a body handling test so that we see how the dog tolerates being touched and handled. And then we do a dog-dog interaction to see if we can judge how dogs meet each other.
And that's my favorite one. It's the stuffy test. Well, not really the stuffy test, but it's sometimes they put this stuffed dog in a pen with the dog to see how they react.
Yeah, if we have a dog that we think is going to be terribly dog aggressive, we don't want to throw another dog under the bus. So we will test with Stuffy. And Stuffy is a life-size dog. And we can...
Life-size meaning?
Stuffed.
17-pound, like, life-size?
Probably 30
or
to 40.
Probably 30 to 40-pound
dog. Okay, so big,
dog.
Medium to
medium
large
size,
dog.
Medium-sized dog, yeah. And it doesn't tell us if a dog is going to be friendly with other dogs based on that, but it can tell us if a dog is going to be really dog aggressive.
Yeah.
So we make those decisions.
So let's say you get a dog in and the dog is frightened, it's food bowl aggressive, it's not good with other dogs. What do you do then?
Depends on the severity of the problem. Food bowl guarding is a very modifiable behavior, so we generally work with those dogs unless they are... We use a fake hand to test taking the bowl away. If they bite the hand, that's a bit more of a problem. If they growl or hunker down over the food, we do a food bowl protocol. And in sometimes a week or less, the dog is okay with food. If it's dog aggressive, severely dog aggressive, we don't place. It's impossible for us to fix that behavior in a shelter. If it is mildly dog aggressive, if it is leash reactive, we can do some dog-dog socials and help the dog with that. Some issues, if they have body handling, they resist body handling, pretty easy to modify that behavior. So we set up behavior protocols and we work with them until they're ready to go.
What's an example of a food bowl behavior protocol? Like, what does that look like?
Generally speaking, when a dog is guarding food, it's a scarce resource, so they want that, and they want to protect it. So the first thing we do is we free feed them, so they can have all the food they want over a couple of days. So we try to convince them in that way that nothing to guard.
So every time their bowl is empty, you put more kibbles
mm-hmm.
in?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that by itself is good enough. We don't have to do anything else. If the dog is still guarding a little bit, we will put the regular food in the bowl, and then we, through a series of steps, add like canned food or something really, really good. So the idea is to teach the dog that when the person approaches the bowl, something better is coming. And frequently, and I would say almost probably usually, after three or four of those protocols over three or four days, the dog is actually looking up, waiting, because the good stuff's coming from the person who's approaching the bowl.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I guess in people psychology, you call it behavior modification therapy. Mm-hmm. I did that with my dog who'd had a terrible, before I got her, she had a really traumatic, life-threatening experience in a car, and she never wanted to get in the car. Mm-hmm. So I took her to the dog park every day for 6 months or 2 months or something like that, and now she loves getting in the mm-hmm. car.
Because she knows at the end of the trip is always this reward.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, it didn't take... And nearly as much as I thought. She would hyperventilate in the mm-hmm. car.
You know,
she
that's
was
really
so
interesting.
Scared.
That was a really interesting point because we've talked about actually getting dogs. We've talked about getting a vehicle that we could put on the shelter properties that the dogs can go mm-hmm. in and out of it. Because a lot of times these dogs, they get adopted, they go straight to a car, and they won't go in the car because
yeah.
they're not used to it.
Yeah.
But it takes a little coaxing, a little bit of treats.
Do you ever get dogs with eating disorders who haven't had enough to eat or who've had to compete with bigger dogs or whatever for their food, and so that's part of their thing? In other words, they never... No matter how much food you give them, they'll just eat until they get sick.
I don't recall us ever having a dog like that at the shelter. It may have happened, but not since I've been there.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, they're guarding a scarce resource, and once they realize it's there and they're satiated, then
they're okay.
Not, yeah.
Now, what about dogs? And I think this is a difficult problem, although probably pretty rare around here. Dogs who just didn't have enough contact with people when they were puppies and really don't have that ability to connect to people.
That is actually not an uncommon problem. We get a lot of dogs that we call reactive. And reactive, I use that word rather than aggressive because aggression carries with it a lot of baggage, that word.
Yeah.
It can be a useful word, but it carries a lot of stuff with it. So we use reactive. And they are people reactive. They may be neophobic, which is a fear of new things.
Neophobic, so, that's a great mm-hmm. word.
So anything new, that garbage can that got moved, new. That coat that's lying on the chair, new. We get a lot of that. And that is, the theory is that that's lack of exposure in the socialization period from like 3 weeks to 12 weeks.
And that's why we have a free puppy classes for puppies that people adopt puppies. We have it every Tuesday night. They come in and are exposed to a lot of different things, music, different
yeah.
hats, all kinds of things, and also other dogs, which is really great.
Yeah, we started that program specifically to deal with that as early as we possibly could. It doesn't mean that the dog is not going to have issues, but it means that they will have fewer issues if people come to puppy class. And it's controlled, positive exposures.
So once you get past a point where the dog is not... You're pretty sure it's not going to bite people when they're moving the food bowl and that it's not so aggressive or reactive that the person in the new home is going to be in danger, but it's still completely disobedient. It won't come, and it pulls on the leash and things like that. What do you do next?
Actually... Those are easy things.
Really?
We have to leave something for the new adopter to do. So we leave them to do the recall, the sit, the down. That's the cream. That's easy stuff.
But I should point out that we also have a really incredible dog walking, or we call it the Humane Dog Walking Program, where our dogs get used to people coming up and putting a harness on, putting a leash on. They walk around. They have some chance to get a break from the shelter life and just sniff things and stuff like that. And that's really, I think, really helpful in just getting dogs accustomed to different things. And Susanna also really enhanced that program. It's really been effective for many of the dogs in our shelter.
Now, if people call and say, I'm having a problem with my dog, it barks all night, can they talk to you and you can sort of talk them through it without meeting the dog?
It depends on the problem. Many times I can give people some advice over the phone. Sometimes it's just a mechanical thing, move this, put this there, let the dog out more often, keep the dog in at night. So I can do some of that on the phone. Behavior is influenced by environment. And so sometimes I have to actually go to the home to see what the environment is and see if we can fix some things, take things out, put things in, change routines. So I do both things.
And so you do home visits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been talking about dog training. Is there cat training? Does this exist? Are cats trainable?
Oh, absolutely. If you can find something that a cat wants that you can provide them as a reinforcer or reward, you can train them.
Tuna fish.
If that's what the cat likes. The thing about the reinforcer or the reward is the cat tells you what it likes. And we have a harder time finding, particularly in the shelter, we have a harder time finding those kinds of things because cats don't respond quite the way dogs do. Their behavior is modifiable. We don't do a lot of training of tricks and that kind of stuff. We work on sociability, approaching, being picked up. Sometimes we get fearful cats that either owner surrenders or strays, and we do a what we call a fearful to friendly F2F program, and we have been really successful in getting these fearful cats to approach using this protocol, and we work with them sometimes even after they go to adoptions, because they in the receiving building we get them approaching and we get them comfortable, then they move and change environment and they regress a little bit, and then we work with them again. We have cats that have been there for a while that start becoming averse to being handled, so we have to work with those cats. We generally do it with what we call negative reinforcement. So we reward them for good behaviors that we find appealing, which is approaching, by giving them some distance, because if they're fearful, distance is what they want. Sometimes we can find kitties that like Fancy Feast or catnip or sometimes tuna, and we can actually use
cats
that to reinforce.
Cats don't like tuna universally?
No.
Really?
Like, nope. Honey Harris says her cat is a vegetarian, which I don't believe.
No.
My cat is not a vegetarian, but he does not like tuna.
Really? So there's no universal thing that cats love?
No.
Very interesting. I guess finicky is one of those words. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Finicky feline. Yeah, I guess that just kind of trips off the tongue.
So I'm sure that some of the dogs and cats that you get in that have these problems are animals that have been abused, sometimes quite badly abused. Do you ever see situations where somebody approaches who must have reminded them of their previous abuser?
You know, it's really hard to know. I think we have fewer abuse cases that come through the shelter than sometimes people think, because animals that are afraid of things may not have had necessarily a bad experience. It could be that neophobia, it's a new thing. And certainly there are animals that come through there that have had bad experiences, but unfortunately we can't interview them and find out, so
we
just have to kind of work with what we have.
They ain't talking.
Yeah.
Well, what about that dog who was found in Española after having been stolen
from
Kentucky?
That was pretty awesome. That was awesome.
I would love to interview that dog.
Wouldn't you?
And know how what happened along the way. But anyway, we have some animals that are up for adoption, which we, of course, have to talk about.
Of course we do. We have lots of great animals at the shelter today and every day. And so something I wanted to talk about was Darko. Darko, you may look at Darko. So we're also having this.
Darko is a very cute black and white cat. Looks very, very intelligent.
And thanks to Suzanne and her staff and other people at the shelter, we do have a lot of animals that are getting used to the shelter environment, and they're there a long time. Unfortunately, they, you know, like puppies or kittens, those always fly out the doors, but some of these other animals take a little bit longer, and so we've reduced the adoption fee for some of those animals. This isn't one of them, but I just wanted to mention that we have people sponsoring animals that have been there for a while, and some businesses who also are just taking up the, really spreading the word out about the animals. So
that's wonderful. Now this is a kitten, Darko.
That's a kitten. Yeah,
it's 8 months old.
But Brad here, he's been here for a while, right, Suzanne?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's a great looking
Brad
dog.
Brad is a dog.
Yeah.
And he's also a puppy. He's 10 months old, and he's a Labrador mix with very pointy straight ears going up in the air and a short coat. And he looks like
Brad Pitt, doesn't he? Isn't that
what
he
looks like? Yeah. Brad. He looks like a
little Brad Pitt.
Labrador dark Brad Pitt. Thank you very much, Ben Swan, for making that comparison. And so lots of wonderful animals available at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. Now, one of the things that I think is important is that there's no right way to train a dog in terms of what the outcomes are. I mean, it'd be good to have dogs that come every time you call for them to come, but some dogs really have quite a lot of obedience in their repertoire and others don't, and it really depends on the relationship between the owner and the animal.
Very much depends on the relationship, but also the consistency. I think that's what a lot of owners forget about doing, you know, if you do this, there's a consequence to it. But if you do this, then you get a reward. So things like that. If there's a consistency in there, you can, then you we have a much better basis for having a great animal. Wouldn't you say so, Suzanne?
Sure. The thing about animals is they need structure, which is hard for humans. The more we can make things clear, don't get on the couch ever. Much easier for a dog to understand than it's okay because it's Saturday, but it's not okay because it's Sunday and I have people coming over.
Right. But what I'm saying is there's no, like, some people have their dogs on the couch, and if the rule is it can go on the couch, then that's okay for that household.
Absolutely. Everybody gets to pick their own rules. It's just better if they're consistent. So if the dog can get on the couch, I have no problem with that, unless there are issues of guarding the space. And then you might have to address that. But sleeping in the bed is not inherently a bad thing. Getting on the couch is not inherently a bad thing. It just depends on the dog's reaction to it. And we may need to adjust it if we need to adjust the behavior that goes along with it. But
see, Mary Charlotte, you actually are a really good dog trainer. All your dogs love to sleep with you. They love to
cuddle
up with you on the couch.
I say, get on the bed. Good dog.
Excellent.
See? And you're consistent.
Every Excellent. But they can learn some variations within that, too. Is there anything that is, I mean, you said we make our own rules, but are there any kind of universals that dogs should never be allowed to do?
You know, I guess that kind of depends. I think it's really hard to say because, you know, I was going to say jumping up on people, really a bad habit, but some people don't care. If your dog is 5 pounds and it jumps on your shin, that's different than if your dog is 60 pounds, it jumps on your head.
Yeah, or on your grandmother.
Or on your grandmother. So, you know, in general, we try to discourage things like jumping. We try to discourage mouthing, where dogs are putting their mouths on hands, even though they're not puncturing or anything. Try to encourage behaviors like sit, lie down, wait, the calm behaviors. It's hard to say that there's anything that they just shouldn't do in the normal range. I mean, obviously they shouldn't bite people. Obviously they shouldn't chase cars and bikes and that kind of thing.
Right.
But on the other hand, I was thinking like, well, yeah, biting definitely is a no-brainer, but then they have, you know, guard dogs and police dogs, and they don't necessarily bite them. They might hold them. So
right.
It really depends.
So there's, it's, yeah.
It really depends on what you want your dog to be.
Right.
If you want your dog to be a companion to set out a couch potato, that's really easy. If you want your dog to be a runner, well, you got to make sure he's a good runner, or he or she can physically keep up with it, and you know, make some allowances for the weather and things like that. But
and if you want your dog to be a couch potato, don't get a Jack Russell Terrier.
Good advice.
The best thing about Jack Russell Terriers is that little hand at the end, right? That little tail that you
the little tail that you can pull them out of
any
holes.
Trouble they're getting into.
It's true. We know this very well. So the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society has a phone number, which
is 983-4309. If you want to call our training and behavior department, call extension
280.
Okay. Yes. And Suzanne Fuqua is the director of behavior and training. Ben Swan is not only with the shelter, but you also
You
do lots of different things. You write articles about animals, and you also manage the resale store.
No, I stopped doing that. But
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's still a great store. Look with the cat dragged in.
Look with the cat dragged
in. I go in there all the time and just say hi to my my fan base. You know, got to support them.
And it's next to the satellite clinic where people can get dog licenses and spay neuter and basic shots and vaccinations.
On Fridays.
Heartworm and things like that.
Yes.
So I want to thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, thank you. As a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
As always.